think that's it for housekeeping. And so, whilst I'm bound to have forgotten something very important, with no further ado, I'll hand over to Roger Watson, who you'd probably rather listen to rather than me. And Roger is a man who needs absolutely no introduction, so I will be very brief. As you can see from the little biography at the beginning in the programme, he's drifted south and now a little bit north over the course of his career. But he's probably best known to all of us as editor-in-chief of the Journal of Advanced Nursing. And today he'll be building on, or talking to, that editorial experience, talking to philosophy and nurse writing as submitted to JAN. So, thank you, Roger.
Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. Thank you. I'll just check this. Yeah, that's working. Okay, well, thanks very much. I was going to tell a story for a start about these things, these microphones, which is a true story. Not a word of a lie in this. I was in Munich about maybe 4 or 5 years ago giving a talk to a German audience, because they're mostly Germans living in Munich, 300 or so in a banked up lecture theatre. And I got wired up with the microphone, and they assured me it wasn't on at the base. So that's fine. Good. So I went to the toilet. Yes, you got there ahead of me. I've told this story many times. And there was a door at the back of the lecture theatre, so I went out to the loo, came back into 300 Germans killing themselves laughing. So the Germans have got a sense of humour, it was one of the most embarrassing things I'd ever done, to be quite frank. Well, thanks very much for inviting me here, because it's with a mixture of delight and terror as well, because I'm not a philosopher. I've had a few tussles with philosophers, at least one of them in the room here. I've always come off worse, but I usually come off wiser, you know. But you'll be very clear by the time I get to the end of the presentation that I'm not a philosopher. Your introduction, Jan, couldn't have been any better in a way for some of the things I'm going to say, actually. In fact, in some ways you may have preempted some of the things that I'm going to say. So I call this philosophy in nursing one of the Romans ever done for us. And what I'm going to do is I'll get to what I'm going to do in just a minute. But you know the fantastic film Life of Brian, which I know some people find offensive for some reason. I'm a Catholic, and I don't find it the least bit offensive. I find it hilarious when someone asks, John, please ask, what have the Romans ever done for us? And they expect it just to move on. He says, well, you know, education, roads, sanitation, all the rest of it. Yeah, but what else have the Romans ever done for us? And I thought it might be a reasonable title to use. I can assure you, finding a title was much easier than defining the content. And I had a couple of goes at defining the content. And initially what I was going to do was look at all the sort of highly cited philosophy papers in JAN and say something about them and the contribution they've made, and then I found it was actually quite difficult to locate the highly cited papers, believe it or not. I know that I don't mean by that the papers aren't highly cited. I mean, it's easier to find out how much a paper's been cited once you find it than the other way around. I tried Google Scholar and the JAN webpage, and I found Google Scholar works on something else, not citation. You can't set it for citations, and the JAN webpage for searching is absolutely useless. I must have a lot with Ted Wiley about that. So what have the Romans ever done for us? One of the funniest scenes in the film, not nearly as funny as the biggest British scene, which really is the funniest scene in just about any film, but I'll skip over that in case that gets out and seems inappropriate. I'm already in trouble, you see, because it's philosophy and nursing. Is it philosophy in? Is it philosophy of? I've seen some of you philosophers arguing about that in the pages. But what I thought I'd look at, first of all, some important people, just to point out one or two, then some important articles, and I'll describe how I found them. It wasn't very systematic. Look at some important issues as I see them, some of the things that have come out of these articles, and then have a look at some genuine concerns I have, which I think I share along with Jan in an introduction. Oops, sorry. And I don't have any... I'm making mistakes with this already. I don't have any particular solutions to any of these concerns, but I was asked to leave some time for questions at the end, and I hope that we can do that and have a discussion. already been discussing with one or two delegates some of the issues to do with nursing philosophy and theory in JAM. So that's sort of it. I'll try and finish by sort of 15 or so. Is that right? We're thereabouts. I want to be disciplined in terms of time. I don't want to overdo it. If I'm shorter than that, that'll leave more time for questions. But if I'm going on too long, just make sure that you slow me down, that you stop me. So some of the important people, just to show you that I do know about philosophy, there's Plato, there's Socrates, and there's Aristotle, and there's somebody who looks remarkably like that. poor old fellow gets a bit of a bashing, doesn't he? Poor old Donald Trump. But I thought I'd point to some other important people who came up, who've come up in the course of my own time as an academic and as an editor, and were important in JAM. I'm sorry, like all these guys here, they're all white and male as well, which is a terrible thing, but it's just the way things have panned out from the articles I've looked at. I'm not saying that there aren't female writers who've made a fantastic contribution philosophically in JAM, but there are some writers who are repeat offenders, as I would say, who keep coming up. And of course, one of these is Gary Rolfe, who comes up regularly, and Stephen Edwards, been at it for a long time in the pages of JAM. Of course, John's here as well, John Paley as well. So these are the sort of people who've sort of come up regularly. They're not the only people I'm going to look at, but I thought that they deserved a special mention. So what did I actually do? Well, the methods that were available, things like hermeneutics, phenomenology, grounded theory, narrative analysis, well, I didn't use any of those because I don't know how to use them, that's not my methodology. So what I did was I sort of looked on Google Scholar. It wasn't as useful as I thought it was going to be, and I used the JAM web page, and then my method was really, I just searched for JAM articles related to philosophy and chose the ones that I liked, basically. So it's not a very rigorous study, I have to say. So I apologise for that. So, as I say, I initially set off thinking Google Scholar would give me, if I put in Google Scholar JAM and philosophy, certainly you get the papers of John Advanced Nursing and Philosophy, you get lots of JAM papers coming up. But what I wanted to see were the ones that were highly cited and being cited by others, but Google Scholar doesn't actually work that way. It works simply on the basis of the number of times or what is mentioned in the article. Exactly the same as Google, it picks up different papers. And the JAM webpage, as I said, was pretty not very useful as well. So I just had to sort of browse a few issues, follow a few threads, and certainly it wasn't so systematic. I think it's something that might be a useful thing for somebody to do systematically sometime. I would have needed a research assistant, I think, at the time that was available for me to do it properly. The JAM has been going for 40 years, and we now publish 300 papers a year, so it's quite a big task to look through them all. So I didn't, but I was aware of one or two papers that were there. Yeah. But first of all, before I get on to that, I'm not going to name and shame or even give the date of the paper. One of the problems I've found with philosophy in nursing, in JAM, and in fact anywhere, is just some of the language that's used. I've got myself in enough trouble recently for pointing to people, naming people and whatever, for citations and whatever. But, you know, this sort of language here, you know, the hermeneutic circles, a metaphor taken from Heidegger to describe the experience of moving dialectically between them. Well, you know, I just find this is not very helpful. I mean, I'm not a philosopher. I don't really understand what it means. And what I've found that the people, certainly Gary and John and Stephen Edwards, was, you know, expressing, this is not from any of their papers, but was expressing things just clearly and simply. And I think one of the issues for writing for philosophy in JAM, and I hope we're getting a bit better at it, is that at one time people used some really highfalutin language that I think only a very small people, separate people, have not understood. And I hope we're getting a little bit beyond that. Hermeneutic circles and ontological perspectives and all the rest of it doesn't really help all that much, I don't think. You can argue with me if you want, but I don't think these things. I think these things have two issues. One, people don't often understand them very well, but also people, especially my PhD students and master's students, try to emulate this way of writing, and I don't think they often know how to use it properly. perhaps it's just me that doesn't understand what they're saying. So what I did was I looked through to find some what I thought were some key articles which really were about philosophy. An awful, I mean, there are hundreds of papers, possibly thousands of papers now in JAM, with philosophy as one of the search terms, but they're not really about philosophy, they're maybe about theory of nursing or whatever, or the word philosophy has just been put in a little bit gratuitously, I think, but the ones that seem to be about philosophy. And this, I think I'm right in saying this was the earliest paper, Philosophy and Nursing by Anne Griffin from 1980. JAM began in 1976. If you know of earlier ones on this, do point them out, but I think this is one of the earliest ones. Anne wrote a couple of papers, one in 1980 and one a little bit later. Interesting, Garnet College of Education in London no longer exists. It's part of Greenwich University now. It disappeared a long time ago. So there's one paper on philosophy and nursing, and one of the first, just settle a couple of things here, one of the early interests was the concept of caring in nursing. This was one of the concerns that she was trying to analyse here. Also interesting that she's not a nurse, she's an educationist. And then there's another paper by Anne in 1983, Philosophical Analysis of Caring in Nursing. This was really about, it was about caring, and it was about, what is it in nursing? How does it differ from other areas? And we'll come back to this a little bit later because I've been involved in some of this myself. So interesting, because I thought not a nurse, and apparently not even working in a nursing context. But the college where she worked was a college that trained lecturers. It was an education college that trained lecturers as opposed to teachers. So I guess there may have been nursing lecturers coming through there. I don't know any more about Griffin than that. I don't know if anybody else here knows anything about her, or even if she's still with us. Don't put her hand up and say she's in the back of the audience. But and again, this early interest by philosophers in the context of caring in nursing, very, very evident. And in the first of the two papers, she was actually responding to a paper by Jim Smith, the founding editor of the Journal of Advanced Nursing, where he was talking about educational research in nursing and really saying that the objectives approach to nursing is maybe not the right one to use, that we should be looking at the process. Education is a process, we can't always measure it by using the end point or the objectives. And it was interesting to see Anne Griffin say, on analysing what Jim had said, it gives me the chance to state that the objectives approach as a major research tool can be condemned with a little reservation. What I've liked about philosophers and all of the people I'm going to mention is their ability to state something very clearly, very definitely, and leaving you absolutely no doubt where they stand. And on the whole, we nurses, who are not philosophers, haven't really been as clear as that, haven't really spoken like that. And I thought it was a really early example of a very clear statement. Whether it's correct or not is another matter, but I think it's a good demonstration of that clarity of thinking. So, as far as I could see, I couldn't find anything else by Griffin later on. I don't know where her work led, I don't really know what her interests were, but I thought it was just interesting that she was there right at the beginning. And then, sorry, this one's a little bit dull for some reason. Some of the early digitised papers in JAM came out a little bit funny when I did the screenshots, they were a bit dull. But then, again, early on, about 1989, there were a few papers in between, but Philosophy and Health by Simon Wood and Stephen Edwards, who's made a few appearances in JAM, who are well known to people here. And what impressed me about this paper from 1989, which is just at the time I went into clinical practice, in fact, when we were talking about all sorts of models of care, primary care and such like, was the exploration of patient and person-centred care, which is all the rage now. I mean, we've moved even away from patient-centred care to person-centred care, and very good friend and colleague Brendan McCormack dines out on this all the time now. But I just thought this was really ahead of its time and really prescient in the sense of dealing with those concepts which we're now very familiar with. At a time when I came into nursing about that, 4 years before that, after my degree in biochemistry. and then came into clinical practice in 1989. We weren't talking about these things at all then. We were being picked up and pointed to from a long time ago. And making statements, again, very clearly making a really nice statement, I thought, about a person in our care mustn't be objectified, and our language and behaviour doesn't remove us from the individuals who provide the meaning to our care. I think this is something else that's come up with, say, with some of Gary Rolfe's work as well. Some of what we do as nurses, and some of what we try to do, we actually forget about the patient. We don't often think about the patient, and I thought it was interesting to see philosophers, or people with experienced philosophy who are nurses, actually trying to draw us back to thinking about the patients in our care. So that was, I think Stephen makes another appearance later on. Excuse me. Then Gary has made a few appearances in the pages of JAN, and I know Gary very well. I'm surprised he's not here. I've had many public disputes with Gary about some of the things he said, but we're very, very good friends. But say, way back again, 1994, proposing a new model of nursing research. And I have to say that some of these papers have, as it happens, as I found it afterwards, been very, very highly cited. This one's been cited about 50 times, which is pretty good for a nursing paper. You don't often expect them to be cited much more than that. It's exceptional if they go above that. And Gary was really looking at nursing research and the way things were going, sort of models that we were aping and asking if this was really the appropriate way for nursing research to go. And he proposed a model of research which looked at this distinction between generating information and other levels of research and actually implementing the information as well. And he said that the purpose of nursing research should be not be, as Field and Morse and many other researchers claim, to develop nursing knowledge, but to develop nursing practice. And I think this is interesting for several reasons. One, Gary really has followed this throughout his career as somebody who's really proposed practice development and really has tried to make the point that all of us as academic nurses should be involved in practice development and not in other forms of research. I think I tend to disagree with him a bit on that. We've clashed on that one. But I think there's a clear difference between what was being said by people in the UK and what was being said by American or North American philosophers and nursing who were much more concerned about developing nursing knowledge and nursing theory. And again, I've had a discussion with one of the colleagues here already about this. It might be something that we want to bring up later on. I have my own views on that. Now, here's a classic and highly cited from 1996 by John, who's not embarrassed to be sitting there and bringing up his paper, How Not to Clarify Concepts in Nursing. And again, slightly, I suppose, a UK versus North American perspective, Journal of Advanced Nursing has been very famous for publishing concept analysis. We have published lots of them. And we've done that over the years fairly consistently. It's not something that ever really gets done. It's been aped by people in Europe and the UK, but it's really something, as far as I know, that comes out of North American style PhDs, where people have to clarify concepts and also get a publication along with things like state of the science papers and things like that, which we don't really see much of in UK style PhDs. And John had a look at this. I hope I'm doing it justice. Had a look at the work around clarifying concepts in nursing. Mostly people seem to use Walker and Adams' method for doing this. As I say, it seemed to become almost an industry, really. And John asked, how is it going to be accomplished? The John's point was really that he hadn't been able to find any answers to the questions that by the authors around concept analysis that really explained how they'd done it. It came from a series of ideas into these concepts and really it wasn't very clear, it wasn't very, very helpful. Now it's interesting that's way back in 1996, so in 2016, Elizabeth, sorry, back down, sorry, I don't know your surname. I spoke to her in 2016, yourself and a colleague from Norway, published a paper about concept analysis as well, making quite a clear statement that really we should stop doing concept analysis. And I'm not sure whether we can stop people doing concept analysis. That's their own choice. But I have to say that on the basis of this article, which really, you know, planted the seeds in my mind a long time ago, and I went back to it again when Jan was considering concept analysis, and then Peter Draper and Janice Morse got into an argument about it, and then yourself publishing your paper, we have actually decided in the Journal of Advanced Nursing now to stop publishing concept analysis. So that might be a controversial point that some might ask me about. The main reason, in actual fact, why we stopped publishing concept analysis, in addition to some of the criticisms of them, was that they just don't get cited. So it's interesting to note. I don't think I would have necessarily noticed that, or my colleagues at Wiley and my other editors would have really noticed that, unless we'd seen the sort of controversy arising. So it's a clear example of where people, people with knowledge of and ability in philosophy, doing a sound critique of this kind of methodology, raised the issue, and we looked into it. And I just checked just now, just to be absolutely sure I was correct, that I picked a random sample of concept analysis papers from the JAM website and looked at them. And not a single one, I looked at 10 just randomly, none of them had been cited more than into double figures, most of them once or twice or whatever. So I think, I'd be interested in what people make of that. I don't think we should be completely driven by citations, but really if nobody's reading them and using them, what is the point? So as I say, we've stopped doing them, and again, it's been very helpful to have people's arguments about that. What we're trying to steer people towards, and again, this might seem controversial too, and I know Gary Roth would find it controversial, is steering people more towards systematic type reviews. If you're going to do a paper like this, why not just make it a systematic type review of the literature? Be transparent about all your sources, and then summarise it or synthesise it in some fairly standard way. So we're having to disappoint many people who haven't noticed that we've stopped publishing them, who still send them in, and we have to say, sorry, we don't take these anymore. We didn't make a big song and dance about it. We didn't write an editorial about it. We just removed that category from our submission criteria, that people have found other ways of putting them in and calling them concept analysis. But anyway, we don't do them anymore. So that was one example. Back to Stephen. Stephen Edwards did a paper in 1997. We're moving fairly quickly forward about what is philosophy of nursing. This one, drew my attention, because really I suppose that's what everybody is asking: what is philosophy of nursing, as distinct from any other kind of philosophy, or philosophy in, or philosophy and nursing, or whatever. And again, it examines some of Ruth Schrock's arguments about philosophy of nursing, and other people who I know Ruth Schrock, I don't know the other person, I'm not a philosopher, so I couldn't get too involved in the actual. As I say, it's metaphysical and epistemological questions, but Stephen said, the purpose of philosophy is really to do conceptual analysis. I'm not sure if that's the same as concept analysis, but certainly analysing things, assessing arguments and concern with general existence and knowledge questions. A very clear statement of what philosophy in nursing was about, and some other very good points in that paper as well about whether this was a legitimate enterprise. To be getting involved in the philosophy of nursing. And I think it is, I most definitely think it is. And I think that's one of the key papers along the way. Excuse me. Another paper that I picked up on, because it looked at philosophy of science, philosophy of knowledge, and philosophy of nursing, was a paper by Janet Brotty. And again, all these are UK papers, I have to admit. But the nature of philosophy, science, theory, and knowledge relating to nursing and professionalism. And what attracted me about this particular paper was just a couple of lines here. She tied it into nurses' professionalism and how that should develop. And I thought this is something we need more than ever at the moment. you know, she was saying that the nature of knowledge, the way nursing develops its knowledge, the philosophy of nursing, if you like, is something that needs to be tied into the way that nursing goes and nursing develops. Whereas if we look at the way, certainly in UK nursing, I'm not familiar with other countries, and I travel a lot, but here we seem to change what nursing is every other year or so. You know, we have a form of nursing education, you know, it comes along just like trades come along every 2 or 3 years, but just at the NMC, once again, sort of defining, you know, what nursing education is about, standards in education, with really no clear idea, now we're talking about this earlier, of where this has all come from, you know. Nobody seems to really sit down, stop the clock, and really take a good philosophical look at what nursing is about. We seem to be defined by the latest crisis. We seem to be defined by things like the Francis Report, which has, you know, the, I can't remember, 29 or something, recommendations about nursing, none about medicine, for example. And we seem to be reacting to that all the time, but a very clear idea of where we are and what we're about philosophically. So Rothe's article, which is fairly recent, was a good example of something which could be quite helpful to try and develop that, whether anybody listens or takes that on board or not, is another matter. So what we tend to do is just to have this sort of knee-jerk reaction to everything that happens. As I think John's often said, something's happened, so something has to be done about it. And we just keep doing that, and we just keep changing the nature of what we're about. Back to John again. This was a classic paper, 2001. John Robarts Nursing keeps changing its format for the papers at the top. And I remember when this was before I was an editor on John Robarts Nursing. I was working on John Clinical Nursing at the time. And I remember getting on a train with a colleague, Jan Draper, and she said, "Have you seen John Paley's latest paper on caring?" I said, "No, I haven't seen it." "So I think you should." So I did. And this was a classic in a sense. Paper called Two Watsons with One Stone. This one. I was heavily involved in trying to define the concept of caring distinguish it from social care, familial care, trying to go through all the arguments that people have gone through before. What we were trying to do was develop a questionnaire, which we did, I think, on the perceptions of nursing, how nurses looked at caring, and what they thought caring was. But John, you know, I think very usefully included this, you know, looked at this enterprise which had been going on since Griffin's time and before, right up to the present. It hasn't finished yet. Of trying to define what nursing's about, and trying to distinguish it, when really, you know, it's almost impossible. And the worst point was, quoted from this necessarily, it's very clear in John's abstract, we're no nearer to understanding what caring is about than we were before. So I don't know, as I say, I think we came out of this one, we did have an exchange and a few articles after that, a few rejoinders and backwards and forth until Jane Robinson drew a halt to the discussion. So I think we probably came off worse, but I certainly came off wiser. But again, it's just the usefulness of having somebody very, you know, clear, not savagely, but at all, very clearly taking something that's, you know, close to you, you've been working on, you think you're right, you know, nobody's put you into what you call the discomfort zone about it at all, and suddenly having you looked at under that spotlight really, really made me think about what I was doing and where we were going with this work. And I haven't really gone much further with that work. We developed it into perceptions of nursing rather than caring. I don't know if that makes things any better or not, because nursing is another of these fairly elusive concepts. And we have used the questionnaires, we've done some useful work with them. But as I say, it was just really useful to have this sort of spotlight shone on the work and make us think about what we're doing. It certainly tightened up our thinking about it. And I remember one of my arrogances when I was looking at this paper and corresponding with John in the pages of Chan afterwards, thinking, well, he's a philosopher, you want to understand what factor analysis is about.
He did. So that was another point. So again, I'm just trying to emphasise that, you know, just how useful this kind of thing is. This is not what we want. And again, I'm not just doing this because John's here. These were genuinely, you know, papers that stood out and have been, you know, as I coincidentally found out afterwards, these have all been really highly cited. These are the sort of papers that are really useful to a journal like JAM. Both these papers have been cited, this one in particular, but you know, well over 50 times, I think, was the last time I looked at it. Caring as a Slave, Morality, Ancient Themes and Nursing Ethics. And there's just some brilliant stuff in this, you know, that caring should be regarded more of a vice than a virtue, you know. And really, this one really stopped people in their tracks. This is a paper that really got spoken about, you know. You don't hear clinical trials in nursing getting spoken about by people at conferences or people emailing me, have you seen this paper? It's papers like this that get spoken about that really stimulate people's thinking. And again, I said it several times, say it again, how much as an editor or as editor we value these kinds of papers. So, and again, back to Gary. Gary's very concerned about research and what we're doing, and especially concerned about what we're doing in the Journal of Advanced Nursing. This was over 10 years ago, but he's followed the theme all the way through. You can see the same threads coming through, and looking at the, you know, the idea of qualitative research. And what Gary was concerned about in this paper was trying to provide frameworks to look at different kinds of research. We're very familiar with these things now, and again, it might be something that we maybe pick up at the end, but we're very familiar with frameworks for randomized controlled trials, for systematic reviews, now for almost every kind of study, diagnostic studies, everything except surveys, really. You know, if you go to the Equator webpage, there's a way of presenting every kind of paper. I think Gary's been sort of vexed about this, saying, you know, either we see the, you know, the research as being a continuum between qualitative and quantitative research, or we say that, you know, it's really futile to try and draw predetermined quality criteria for each kind of study. And again, this was prescient. This was a bit ahead of its time, because it really is only in the last 10 years or so that we've seen the rise of all these different international standards for presenting papers. They've really come to the fore, but Gary could see where we're going on that. I think I used to tend to think of quantitative and qualitative research as being on a continuum. I know that that's anathema to some qualitative researchers, especially people using grounded theory, but if you read Glaser and Strauss's book, The Discovery of Grounded Theory, they're quite clear about qualitative research and grounded theory in particular being used as a precursor to quantitative research. I think that also we've kind of moved away from some of these arguments. But anyway, you know, it might be worth somebody at some point, and I've already had a chat with somebody already in the conference before lunch, whether we really, you know, should be boxing studies into these different frameworks and criteria. And, you know, I'd like to know from you as an editor, because that's exactly what we do. We don't publish anything these days unless it fits a specific box. And you'll know yourself from publishing papers, if you're working in trials or reviews or anything like that, that there are strict criteria to follow. Is it useful or is it not? And I suppose preempt one of my questions from later on is, does philosophy fit within these frameworks? You know, is it a useful way to look at what you do and what you write about? And I've got John again. Again, I'm just playing up to John because he's here, but John really has, you know, really has taken some of the big questions and really shaken the life out of them. You know, high degree of lived experience and method. And again, this is fairly recent, 2014. This is another paper that has had a profound influence on my thinking as an editor. John has said, you know, really said that, you know, people use these methods, but not very explicitly. I think John's always polite to say that, you know, he's rude about the people using the methods, or about the method himself. But the problem is, again, I hope I'm representing it properly, John, that people are not very clear about how they use it. But I really like the quote here that the nursing researchers wish to embrace Heidegger's philosophy as a basis for their work, should abandon lived experience interviews and adopt the other methods used above. There seems to have been something in nursing whereby we misinterpret what people actually meant in philosophy. I'm not a philosopher, I can't verify that or analyse that in any detail, that's your job. But people seem to assume they know what these people were talking about and therefore do other things which are just not very clear or not really strongly based on. John's latest book expounds on that exceedingly well. And I have to say that I am now, as an editor, almost immunised against papers that come in with the lived experience of anything. People may be working on these things now, but it's just something that seems to be in our psyche and we just use it too readily, really. A lived experience of someone with cancer, someone with COPD, someone with... I'm just not sure. I mean, these are serious illnesses, they're serious issues. We do need to find out what people think. I'm not sure how much new information we can get from these studies. And again, the spotlight, again, this is from the publishing angle, the spotlight is beginning to turn on some of these papers because they're not being cited, they're not being read, they're not being used, they're not being cited. And we're not just chasing citations for an impact factor, we do that, but what I mean is if they're not being read and cited, what's the point? And really, lived experience of nurses doing something, going to different environment or a change in management or whatever, we're just moving away from these altogether. So if you're going to do lived experience papers, at least it should be about patients and not about nurses, but I think we should maybe think about at least other ways of presenting it. Martin got back on John's challenge in Jam Forum. This is the only reply that I'm going to show, and because I followed through a trail, you can see on the sometimes see them coming up together on the page. And I thought, what did Martin say about this? Very, very good. I really liked what Martin said here, based on what John has said, and he's critical of some of the points that John made. But he said, for example, do we invoke theory because it's integral to the argument we've presented, or is theory sometimes confetti, confettied onto research to meet publication expectations? I'd be very interested to hear what people say about that. As an editor, as an academic, I don't have much interest in nursing theory at all. I'm not very sure where it's or any sort of these theory. I'm not very sure where it's helped us really, but I know that some people are very wedded to it. And I think there has been, certainly in JAM, over the years, a feeling that you must get theory in there or the paper not going to get published, the paper not very good. We've moved a little bit away from that. Has that been a good thing or a bad thing? I'm not entirely sure. But we really have got to try and get away from doing things simply because, or getting people to do things simply because we expect it as publishers. And again, that's a... made me think a little bit about the place of theory in our papers in JAM. I think, as I say, I think there's less theory now than there used to be, but I know that at least one person in the room would like there to be more theory than there was before, so look forward to maybe discussing that later. So, not what the Romans ever done for us, what have philosophers actually done for us, certainly at the Journal of Advanced Nursing, but I think extend that to nursing generally. First of all, I think whether they're nurses and philosophers or just pure philosophers, like some of the colleagues here, I think it's great. They've taken an interest. They've actually looked at what they do. There'll be nothing worse than being ignored. And I think it's very good that they've taken an interest, shone a spotlight on various places, made us think, made us debate, often made us debate for them. And I certainly think and hope that it's made us better as researchers, better as academics, and better as nurses. They've challenged sloppy thinking, in addition to taking an interest. I think this is really the major job of philosophers, is to see this sloppy thinking. And I think that this is something that could be used as an application these days, as I'll come to at the end. I don't think philosophers are used enough, whether they're philosophers in nursing or philosophers generally. I say we often don't think very clearly when we're designing projects and when we're writing them up. And I can certainly think of one project, I'm not going to embarrass myself or the colleagues who are with me on it, I can certainly think of one project that I had major funding on where our thinking of the design of the project just wasn't right at all and gave us huge problems in getting it published because we just hadn't thought clearly about the link between the cause and the effect in this project at all. I think having somebody from outside to look at that dispassionately, who wasn't involved in the research, who didn't want to prove anything, might have been very helpful. Would have been very helpful. They've injected reality checks into debates, and I really hope there's a place for philosophers to continue doing this, because there are so many. I'll give you some of the examples of things that are going on just, that I think are important debates at the moment, but I think we need more of these reality checks, because we get carried away in just talking about things we're interested in, things that we think we know, things that are often politically driven and maybe aren't all that important. And I think, remarkably, whereas people might think the opposite, I think the philosophers have helped us to link our research to practice and ask, Gary Rolfe's been a classic example of this, of showing us, how a research has got to meet patient expectations, got to meet patient needs. It's not a rarefied exercise. This is not something that's based simply on building up careers and philosophising, theorising about nursing, that we are actually here to look at patient care, the care of patients. So that's what the philosophers have done for us. What I hope is philosophers can keep doing that for us, and I'm going to change tack ever so slightly here. What more could philosophers do for us? I think they could help us sort out some of the present mess in nursing, and I think certainly in UK nursing, we've always been in a bit of a mess and a crisis, but I think we really are in a bit of a mess at the moment over various things. Random example, the whole argument about graduate versus non-graduate nurses. I happen to be hugely in favour of graduates in nursing. There is some empirical evidence to support that. That was quite a deal of empirical evidence from Linda Aiken's work and some of my own work with colleagues doing some big data analysis. But I think really it requires some examination by somebody without a vested interest in that debate to look at why might it be valuable. And I don't actually think we've done enough of that. Everybody who's been involved in this so far has had a vested interest in it. Like me, because of course I've got a vested interest in becoming graduate nurses because I work in the university. New routes into nursing, things like these apprenticeships and at one point, and of course amusement by things like apprentice nursing, the cadet nursing, all these sort of things. I think all these things need really, really examining. The new routes of nursing is very up to date, of course, because we've got apprenticeship nurses in the UK now. We were supposed to have 3,000 of them. I think we've got fewer than 100 places. So, surely somebody could have a look at that before it happened and said, look, this is likely to be a waste of time. Like many of us were saying, cadet nursing way back in the 1999, which had already existed in some form, but was reintroduced by the Labour government then, again, it was just going, it was likely to be a waste of time, and indeed it proved to be the case. So I sometimes think we could have some clear thinking on these things before we get into the situation of having policies and making the mistakes. This is a very personal one. The infiltration into nursing by things like traditional Chinese medicine, complementary and alternative medicine, which would be an umbrella call for that. I put my cards on the table and say not greatly in favour of these things based on the lack of evidence, but evidence and even philosophical argument doesn't say make the deaf hear, but I do think that we need to have some more really pungent analysis of some of the issues around this. We're supposed to be a research-based and evidence-based profession, yet how many nurses go off and do aromatherapy courses and TCM and all the rest of it, and probably pressing a few buttons and raw nerves in the room, but I think I see it as infiltration, and often without any real solid basis for doing it or needing it. It's interesting. I think one area where philosophers could help us in this debate is the whole area of testing CAM and TCM. The CAM practitioners in the UK tend to be of the opinion you can't test these using
scientific methods, randomized controlled trials, or whatever, or cohort studies, because the paradigm is wrong, whatever that means. Well, you go to China, where I go regularly. I'm going for my third visit next month, and I'm going again the month after. I've been twice this year. I've just come back from Taiwan. I've been to Hong Kong three times this year. I know the area very well. They're working their butts off, excuse my language, to test TCM using traditional methods to see if it actually works, to see if it's even worth the candle, all the investment they put into TCM. It's still a big thing there. The whole hospital's dedicated to TCM, but they are actually trying to test it. But here we don't seem to be willing to get into properly testing these things. So those are just random concerns, random points. But some of my genuine concerns, and this is absolutely just picks up exactly what Jan said at the beginning. You know, regardless of the papers that I pointed out there, that was a little bit lighthearted, a little bit whimsical or whatever, but there were some important points coming through, and there are many more papers in Jan and other journals with important philosophical points about nursing. But will there continue to be a place for philosophical writing and disciplines and subjects other than philosophy itself? I think it could be in danger within nursing because of the sort of the model of publishing that we're following, and I just wonder how you're going to address that and how I as an editor am going to address that. I don't want to denigrate my publishers, what was Wiley for many years, I have a great relationship with them, but I see ever increasing pressure just to publish things that are highly cited or that follow a particular pattern, and a lot of what we've been looking at, a lot of the articles we've been looking at, don't really fall into that pattern. I think we've got to try and make sure that we create a niche for those articles or a place for them to be published. And again, exactly what Jan was saying, is there a place for philosophical writing in the face of what I see as the new scholarship of social media? And I really do believe that social media, blogging, tweeting and all the rest of it, which I'll give examples, and I do believe that this is a new form of scholarship. And will philosophical writing and nursing survive in the new landscape of academic publishing? Because that's changing rapidly as well. We're going to get fantastic. So, the new scholarship, social media, all these things, Twitter, Facebook, blogging, research project registration, data repositories, things like The Conversation, which seem to be the way that people are getting things out these days. I have to say that I'm pretty plugged into all these things. I've had a few articles in The Conversation. It's a great way to get things out, but it's sound bites. And it's not very based on very in-depth arguments or whatever. And I have to say, there's a lot more than this. There's a whole online open access drive within publishing as well, which is driving this as well. I think philosophical writing could be in danger if it doesn't change or doesn't find somewhere fitting in here. At the moment, this is not the philosophers. This is the publishing industry. We look a bit like this. This is Wiley, Elsevier, Springer, and the rest of them. You know, we'll be huge changes, online, open access, tweeting, blogging sites, and all the rest of it. But I think there's going to be a catastrophic change in the publishing industry soon. I'm trying to get something published on this, and the Times hire, they're not interested so far. I've tried a few other places, but I really think it's going to change. And the journal article, which surely has to be, you know, something very important in the field of philosophy, is going to disappear. I think it's in its present form, it's going to disappear. How are you going to adapt to that as the meteors come flying in to make us all extinct? Okay, I'm going to change tack completely, finish off, 1 minute to go. I go to Washington a lot every year. I always run up the Lincoln Memorial and turn around and say, I have a dream. So I have a dream regarding philosophy. If it doesn't survive all the other things that we're talking about there, I think philosophers, you know, every research project should be required of a statistician, a health economist. I think more and more we should have a philosopher in each research project. Keep us right, keep our thinking right. Just something that's come to me recently, and I think I haven't done it yet, but it's something I would push for in the future. We always have these guys, but we can never have you guys on there to keep us right in terms of our thinking, not necessarily involved in the project, but there in your own right. I think every editorial board should have a statistician, health economist, and a philosopher, and I'm going to go back and check to make sure that we do that. I think we do, but we need to check, because I think we need to have people who are experts in this area to help us to, you know, work our way through what's happening. And I think every philosopher should have a Twitter site, a blog,
a podcast site as well. Okay? I think you've got to get. I mean, this is not going to go away, this social media, and I don't see that many philosophers engaging here. I think you need to get out there and engage with it and somehow own it. Anyway, thank you very much. It was a great privilege to come and speak to you. A bit of a ramble around various issues. And I said at the beginning you'd be quite clear at the end that I wasn't a philosopher, you'd be absolutely convinced now. But thanks very much for the welcome.